You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the world around us has been forced to slow down. Less traffic, fewer trips to the store, less on our to-do list. We'll talk to a guest who says the slower pace might be just what we need right now. Now, Governor Tony Evers' first Safer at Home order was scheduled to expire this Friday. That order, rolled out via DHS Secretary Designee Andrea Palm, has been extended to stay in effect until May 26th. Yesterday, though, Republicans in the state legislature moved to have Wisconsin's Supreme Court block that extension. Sean Johnson is WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief. Sean, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob.
Can you talk us through exactly what's in this Republican challenge in the Supreme Court? What are they asking the court to overturn here?
They are asking the court to overturn specifically this Safer at Home extension, which was signed by DHS Secretary Andrea Palm, which takes effect this Friday when the original Safer at Home order expires. As you mentioned, the new Safer at Home order runs through May 26th. So that's the one they're going after. They're going after her authority to issue orders like that. And it's specific to those powers and not other powers that have been exercised by Governor Tony Evers since COVID-19 hit.
Right. And it looks like the court will have to consider, and the different sides are arguing over a couple different places that may or may not give authority to the governor. And the governor declared an emergency that gives him certain powers through, I think it's May 11th. But that's not what Andrea Palm, Secretary Designee Palm, is referring to in these Safer at Home orders. Do I have that right?
You have that right, yeah. So when Governor Tony Evers declared a public health emergency back in March, he activated powers which last 60 days. And those powers can be extended by a joint resolution of the legislature, or they can be repealed by a joint resolution of the legislature. So lawmakers have the power to roll those back whenever they want. They have not done that, and that is not the power that was used to issue Safer at Home version 1 or the extension. The power used to extend Safer at Home was something that's been in state law to deal with communicable diseases. There's this law set up that gives the Department of Health Services really broad authority to deal with communicable diseases. It says the department may authorize and implement all emergency measures necessary to control communicable diseases. The department may close schools, forbid public gatherings in schools, churches, and other places to control outbreaks and epidemics. Those are the powers that Andrea Palm used to issue Safer at Home, and those are the powers that Republicans are going after in this lawsuit.
In the lawsuit and in statements, Republican leaders, including Speaker Robin Voss and Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, have said the way these powers are being used gives Andrea Palm, I think they use the phrase, czar-like powers to do these things indefinitely. They're seeing this. They're calling this an abuse of these powers and want the court to stop that. So can you talk more about what Republicans had to say?
They're basically arguing that Andrea Palm and the Department of Health Services needs to go through the legislature before they issue these orders. That because of the legislature's rulemaking power over state agencies, agencies like DHS have to issue, when they issue rules like this, they're saying it has to go through the normal rulemaking process where a panel of legislators signs off. So essentially they're saying the legislature needs to have veto power over these rules, and that's what they're asking the court to declare, is that these declarations from DHS have to get the okay of state lawmakers first.
We're talking to WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson about Safer at Home orders and a challenge by Republican legislative leaders in the Supreme Court to try to put an end, in effect, to the Safer at Home orders, claiming the state's health department has overreached its powers. Now, Governor Evers has responded. He talked to reporters last night. Here's a listen to a little bit of what he had to say.
Legislative Republicans, frankly, have said to the people of Wisconsin, our power, our political power, is more important than your health.
So Governor Evers saying lawmakers are overreaching here. Can you talk more about the response so far, Sean?
Yeah, just hearing from Evers last night, he it's dangerous to like read what's going through somebody's mind when they're speaking, but he sounded angry on a call with reporters last night. Really went after Republicans, accused them on multiple occasions of putting their own political power above the public health, saying that if they're successful and the Supreme Court strikes down the Safer at Home order, and then it's going to result in people dying. He wasn't just basically saying that, he was saying it, that what Republicans want is to give them more power in the process, and that if this is tied up in administrative rulemaking, they're not going to agree to anything quickly, which is what he says this law was designed to do, and that that will result in fewer people being protected and will result in more deaths from COVID-19.
Let's hit the courts now, Sean, the Supreme Court in particular. What is the timeline now on this, and what when could we see an outcome?
So we just had an example of what the court can do when it wants to act quickly, and that is it can act extremely quickly. You think back about what the governor did on April 6th when he tried to use his emergency powers. Those were not the DHS's powers. Those were his emergency powers to try to stop the April 7th election. He was unsuccessful because Republicans filed a complaint immediately with the state Supreme Court. And in that case, the state Supreme Court blocked the governor's orders about 4 hours after he issued it. So that's what the court can do. That's not what the court is doing in this case. They are taking at least some time to think about this. So the one that Republicans wanted to block from taking effect, it takes effect Friday, this coming Friday the 24th at 8 in the morning. The state Supreme Court is letting parties weigh in with briefs on this case until the 30th of April. So next Thursday. So the new order will be in effect for, at least a week before the court acts. And then we don't know how soon the court is going to issue a decision after briefs are filed. And one of the things that the legislature asked the court to do was to grant a 6-day stay to basically give the DHS time to put a rule before the legislature so they can effectively so that they could work out a deal. So the court could decide to do that too, and then you're looking at maybe mid-May where this Safer at Home extension is in place. But, if the court does strike it down, we don't really know what's going to happen after that. It would require either the governor and Republican lawmakers to agree on what a new Safer at Home order would look like, or maybe they kind of punt it to local governments, and you have counties issuing their own orders. We don't know at this point.
And right now, it sounds like it would be hard to get an agreement on an order because there's a fundamental difference, it seems like, on the priority over economy versus protecting public health, statewide orders versus, as you say, local orders. Republican leaders and the governor not on the same page here as far as their approach to this illness. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you have that right. I mean, they're talking about more of a regional approach. This seems to be like the real drumbeat among Republicans is that rural counties that have a very small number of cases should not be treated the same as urban counties that have more cases, more people, and that there should be a regionalized plan. The governor's response to that has basically been that, the COVID-19 doesn't know borders, and that in many cases, the smaller counties, while they have a smaller number of people, they also lack the health care infrastructure to deal with an outbreak should it happen. So he's been very resistant to doing more of a regional approach to this, and so it seems like he's pretty far from Republicans and vice versa on this.
We'll watch and see what develops in the court. Sean, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, WPR Capitol Bureau Chief, giving us the latest on a state Republican effort to block the Evers administration's extended Safer at Home order. coming up. You may have more time on your hands right now. We'll find out about an unusual opportunity to listen back to some much-loved Chapter a Day offerings. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, if you got some time on your hands and want to hear some great stories, we'll tell you all about Chapter a Day your way. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a mother's tea.
Many of us grew up questioning our parents' methods and traditions, only to find ourselves embracing them later in life. That was definitely the case for Rita Yeolor. She tells us about the skepticism and love of her mother's tea.
When I would get sick, my mother would rummage through the cabinets, pulling out crinkled Ziploc bags filled with twisted roots that once clung to the earth, golden leaves touched by King Midas, and of course, the trusty old Chopa Jay. The Chopa Jay was our family's medicine rock, this white, clay-like crystal my mother would scrape into a powder before boiling it into a tasteless tea. Then she'd order me to drink and ask no questions. I had many. I drank anyway. My mother comes from a long line of healers. Her father was a shaman who traveled between both worlds. She is an herbalist who interprets dreams. I happen to be the skeptic of all things. When I was 8, I lost one of my front teeth. Months went by and still no tooth. "How did you throw it away?" my mother asked, because you see, there's a special way of disposing of one's tooth. If you lose a tooth along the top, you must hold the tooth up to your forehead and let it fall into the garbage. Our teeth at the top grow down, so the tooth must also go down. My mother did not witness how I had thrown the tooth away and became concerned. One day she said, "When we go to the garden, bring an apple." Across our garden was a grassy field, and in that field lived a horse. I was instructed to offer the apple to the horse and say, "Horsey, horsey, my tooth will not grow back. May I have one of your teeth, please?" Shortly after that, it grew back. I remained a skeptic. I was embarrassed by my mother's unconventional ways. Many times I demanded to see the label of her ingredients. My mother said her chua didn't come with labels. She would say, "Bei Meng Huli Na, we Hmong call it this." And this never seemed to have a good translation. For example, chua guta hao literally means medicine hot head. When you Google it, it pulls up hot flashes and menopause, which I don't think I was experiencing at 15. I refused to drink my mother's chua from then on. The following 10 years, I did what most everybody does. I went to the doctor. Sometimes I was told to go home and let things heal on their own, take some Advil, apply this cream, here some antibiotics. Something was always missing, though. I started to explore how others heal themselves and became fascinated with rocks, these everyday things that could be a billion years old. Imagine the stories they must hold. I wondered if that was what my mother thought when she untangled roots or collected leaves for another herbal concoction. During my rock phase, I learned about selenite, known as a healing stone. It's sometimes sold in thin, long slabs. I ordered one for myself, and when it arrived, I noticed it was soft, a bit dull, and somewhat chalky. That's when I realized I had seen this before, in my mother's kitchen. The trusty old Chopa Jay, the tasteless tea I drank as a child, this was it, just in a different form. I was babysitting my nephew when he lost a tooth. He wanted to put it under his pillow for some tooth fairy money. "Bud," I said, "do you want tooth fairy money, or do you want your tooth to grow back?" There we stood in front of the garbage bin. Sometimes the universe has its way of leading you back to your mother's tea.
That story came to us from Yeolor, a writer who lives in Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, Chapter a Day is WPR's longest-running program. It was started way back in 1931. You can hear it every weekday right here on the Ideas Network at 12:30 p.m. and 11 p.m. Now, they've got something cool going on. Michelle Good wears many hats at WPR. She's one of our awesome technical directors here on Central Time. And she's executive producer, host, and technical director for Chapter a Day. Michelle!
Rob!
Good to talk to you, Michelle. Now, we mentioned Chapter a Day started way back in 1931. We'll dig into some of the history here. But tell us about Chapter a Day Your Way, a special thing available during this time where a lot of people are staying at home.
Well, it's what we did is we went back into the archives, and normally when you listen to Chapter a Day, each chapter is only up for 1 week. It's an agreement we have with the publishing companies, and so after a week, it disappears forever. So what we decided to do, actually based on a listener comment, is go back to some of the publishers and say, hey, you know, with what's going on with this coronavirus, it would be a great service to our listeners if you would allow us to repost the audio for some of these previous books, and not just a chapter at a time, but put the entire book up on the website so people can stream it unlimited, listen to every chapter, binge listen if they want to. And a whole bunch of them came back to us and said, oh my God, we would love to do that. In fact, a couple said, thank you for thinking of us. We're honored to be able to offer that service to your listeners.
What are some of these Chapter a Day favorites that you're able to put back online in this tough time?
Right now, we've got Laurentian Divide, which just finished airing. Walden, which is currently airing. As soon as that finishes, that will go up on the listening page. Robert's Rules, which is not about parliamentary procedure. It's a novel set on Washington Island. The Williamson Turn, which is sort of a murder mystery that takes place on a yacht that's crossing the Pacific. Let's see what else. Nature's Army, which is the CCC in Wisconsin by Jerry Apps. One of Norman Gilliland's books, Midnight Catch, and The Tale Teller, which is a Native American detective story.
Nice variety there. I want to listen to one of the offerings, Robert's Rules from the North of the Tension Line series by J.F. Reardon. This one read by Jim Fleming.
Ben almost always went for a ramble before heading home from school. These days, his pattern had shifted a bit in order to go first to visit the rescued goat living in Nancy Iverson's barn. It was Ben who had found the animal while he was living in the wild, befriended it, and saved it from drowning when it had fallen through the ice. These experiences had formed a deep bond of affection in Ben's young heart.
Michelle, a lot of people have fallen in love with listening to stories read to them by Jim and by you and by Carl and others over the years. What is it about Chapter a Day that people love so much, maybe especially right at a time like now?
Well, you know, I think that books always have been a comfort to people during times of turmoil, and I don't think that ever changes. If they give us the opportunity to explore new worlds and see new possibilities and even, you know, just escape if you want to. And of course, everybody loves being read to, especially by somebody like Jim or Norman or Carl.
It, or you.
It kind of brings us, and me, it kind of brings us back to our childhoods.
Remind us how people can find these Chapter a Day Your Way. If they're thinking, yeah, I want to listen tonight, what do they do?
You can go online, wpr.org/chapter-day-your-way. Also easier to find if you go to wpr.org/chapter. We've got a link right on the page.
Let's talk a little bit about the early days of Chapter a Day. I've heard this story over the years, Michelle. Correct me if I'm wrong. Chapter a Day started as an accidental feature on Wisconsin Public Radio.
That is the legend. We're not actually positive that's how it happened, but the legend goes that one of the interview hosts, was waiting for his guest to show up. The guest didn't show, and so he just opened the book that he happened to be reading and started reading from it for the length of the program. People responded so positively to it that they started bringing it back. It was more of a fill starting in about 1931, but then as of 1939, it became a permanent weekday fixture, and we've been on the air ever since.
Now, I know from talking to you and some of the other people who have read these books on the air, it's not just sitting down, cracking open a book for the first time and reading. Can you talk about some of the prep that goes into getting this ready?
Yeah, there's a lot more prep than people would think. One, it has to be edited to fit that 30-minute slot. And we also don't want to end it, you know, in the middle of a sentence, in the middle of a high point. So we do go through and we abridge the book. Generally, there are times when publishers do request that we read the book in full. Often, if you hear long musical endings, like 3 minutes of music at the end, that's probably because we have to read the book in full. Generally, we try and hit like the 27-minute mark with just a little bit of time. But yeah, you've got to read it through once, just see if you like the book, if it's good, if it's something we can air. And then you usually end up reading it through about 3 more times aloud, just to get your pacing, to keep track of who the characters are, so you can, you know, recreate a voice from chapter 1 to chapter 7. And the pacing, the timing really is probably the hardest thing to get down, because we try and do it in all one long take with almost no errors.
Wow. I didn't even know that part. Michelle, thank you so much for sharing this with us today. It's always a lot of fun.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rob.
Michelle Good is executive producer, host, and technical director for Chapter a Day. She joined us to talk about a chance to listen back to some previous Chapter a Day books that have not been available since they aired originally. They can only stay online usually for a week. You can find them at wpr.org/chapter-day-your-way, or just go to wpr.org/chapter and look for a link. Coming up, if there was ever a time to sit still, maybe it's now. Our next guest encourages us to notice how this forced slowdown has given us more time to do nothing. He says that's a silver lining we should pay attention to. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on the morning show, get some personal finance advice and info on economic recovery payments. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now, it's pretty easy to find ourselves constantly busy in our business-as-usual lives. There are always more errands to run, a different place to go, maybe out to dinner, plans with friends, lessons to attend, work to do. Maybe we're all a little guilty of treating busyness like a virtue. But what happens when much of that comes to a forced stop, when there are fewer things we're able to do, when we're confined maybe to our homes? Some people are experiencing a bit of a forced slowdown right now, something that doesn't happen that often, and our guest says this slowdown might be just what we need. Alan Lightman is a writer and physicist who teaches at MIT. He's the author of several books, including Einstein's Dreams and In Praise of Wasting Time. He wrote the piece, "The Virus is a Reminder of Something Lost Long Ago," for The Atlantic. Alan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk first, Alan, about the pace of life in what we might think of as normal times. You write that it is sped up a lot, but in many ways, we didn't really notice it. Can you talk about how we got caught up in this high-speed, busy way of life?
Well, I think that the pace of life has always been regulated by the speed of communication. And the speed of communication has been getting faster and faster and faster. And I think it's happened almost invisibly. I think the time equal money equation has also put a premium on the commercial use of time. And I think, like so many other things in modern life, new technology comes along and we just accept it. It becomes part of our lives. I don't think that we can even remember what life was like before the smartphone. So we just adapt and we don't think about the larger consequences.
we see a lot of innovation in how we use technology, including the information technology you were talking about. But you also talk about innovation in a different way in the habits of our minds, which can be mm-hmm. hard to shake up and use in a new way. What do you mean by that?
I mean that the forced staying at home, we're being forced by the coronavirus to slow down our lives. And our routines are disrupted. Of course, those of us who are staying at home are lucky compared to the frontline workers, the hospital workers, and the people in grocery stores and so on. With time on our hands, we find ourselves alone with our thoughts, and we have the opportunity to think about things that we don't normally think about. What is important to us? What are our values? Where are we going? Those questions sound kind of trivial in a way, but they're very important. And I think that in the fast pace of the modern world, that many of us haven't had the time to think about questions like that, to think about who we really are and where we're going. And I think that applies to the country as a whole, as well as to individual people, that our country has an inner life, but it's not really aware of it. This is long before the coronavirus, long before the Trump administration. I think that our country as a whole has lost its way because it has not thought about what our real values are. So that happens at a national level as well as at the level of the individual.
I think at the individual level, and I'm guilty of this myself, there's a sense that if I'm doing nothing, I'm not doing any kind of activity, I'm just there and thinking, I'm wasting my time. I'm frittering away a valuable resource. How do we shake ourselves out of that mindset? How do I do that?
Well, that feeling that wasting time is almost sinful, that goes back to our Puritan roots, where working was the only thing that had value. But actually, I think wasting time does have value. And when we talk about wasting time, I mean anything that is not goal-directed. A time where you're just letting your mind spin, where you're imagining, you're dreaming, you're remembering things, important experience in your life. You might be reading a book. You might be having a quiet conversation with someone. Just because you're not checking off items on your to-do list doesn't mean that the time is not valuable. And we really need that time. We need to replenish our minds, which is an idea that the Buddhists have had for thousands of years. I think we're more creative when we're letting our imaginations wander. And we're also nourishing our inner self, that part of us that thinks about what's important to us.
We're talking to author and physicist Alan Lightman. His books include Einstein's Dreams and In Praise of Wasting Time. He says our safer at home times during the coronavirus could be a wake up call to the need to slow down, take some time to do nothing in our daily lives. Alan, in that piece you wrote in The Atlantic, you talk about some creative people who got a lot out of having that nothing time. Can you give us some examples of people who did great stuff because they took the time to not do anything?
Yes. Well, psychologists have always known that creativity thrives on the imagination, on I won't say wasting time, but just sort of being at rest in time. Gustav Mahler, the composer, used to take 3-hour walks after lunch where he got some of his best musical ideas. There are many other people who have found that getting away from their normal routines has allowed them to think new thoughts. Einstein also talked about how when he let his mind wander, that he sometimes had some of his best ideas. Gertrude Stein, the writer, used to take drives in the countryside and just look at cows when she was in the middle of a writing project. So those are a few examples.
So it seems like there's a paradox here. If we fill our times to the brim and think of ourselves as always being productive, we're going to be less productive if we don't have that time that lets us do that kind of creative thinking you're talking about.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And in fact, some companies in the U.S. have instituted meditation rooms where they allow their employees for a half an hour a day to just stop working and to go into one of these rooms without their smartphones and just have quiet time. And they have found that that actually increases productivity. So it's exactly the irony that you mentioned. By having working a little bit less, but having that extra time to just allow our minds to replenish themselves, to have creative thoughts, that were actually more productive.
We're talking to Alan Lightman, writer and physicist who teaches at MIT. He's the author of a number of books, including Einstein's Dreams and In Praise of Wasting Time. He wrote the piece, "The Virus is a Reminder of Something Lost Long Ago." It appears in The Atlantic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has your life, your schedule slowed down now? Have you felt a change of mindset? Do you feel restless? You got to fill the time? Or are you embracing a little time where you allow yourself to do nothing? And even pre-coronavirus, have you made time in your life for nothing? Maybe just that long walk or that long reading of a book or thinking or meditating or a conversation without a goal to it. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Alan Lightman, writer and physicist who teaches at MIT. His books include In Praise of Wasting Time. He's talking about the value of taking time to do nothing. And maybe in this time, with all the downsides of coronavirus, trying to find a silver lining and find ways to slow down our lives a little bit and take time to do nothing, which it turns out is pretty good for us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you, in your daily life, try to leave time for nothing, for things that aren't productive at all, but that make you feel better, make you feel more in touch with yourself and what's going on inside your brain? Has the forced shutdown now given you more time to notice things, or do you feel restless when you have nothing to do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Alan, for people who aren't used to doing this, who maybe as an exercise try taking the time to do nothing, whatever their version of nothing is, and feel restless and want to reach for the cell phone or feel silly and wasteful doing it, do you have some advice, some thoughts on how we can break through that and do nothing right?
Yeah, well, one thing is just to take 30 minutes a day for a walk. I know that in the time of the coronavirus that some of us don't have places to walk, but that will pass. But if you do have a place that you can walk safely, do not take your smartphone with you, and just see where your mind goes. Another thing that we can do is have a quiet dinner hour. The dinner hour may be only 30 minutes, but however long it is, to turn off all of your devices and just have a quiet conversation during dinner time. So those are a couple of ways that we can that are fairly painless to build into our lives to see how it feels.
With that pace of the flow of information we were talking about earlier, there is, you know, there's that phrase, the fear of missing out. Given the volume of news coming in, either, you know, news from around the world, or, you know, what are our friends up to or anything like that, it can feel like that time away from the phone, we're missing so much. How do we break out of that mindset?
Well, that is a problem. And I know that fear of missing out is a psychological problem, especially among our young people who send about 100 text messages a day.
It's bringing a call. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think the only solution to that is try turning off your phone for 15 minutes and see whether you can survive it.
Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Leah is with us in Ettrick. Leah, hello.
Hi. See, I just wanted to say that your guest speaker hit the nail on the head with having downtime, stopping, smelling the roses, breathing. With the coronavirus, you know, most people will never get the opportunity again to be able to, you know, stay at home. I am an essential worker, but I was able to take 6 weeks off at the beginning of the year for a medical procedure. And, you know, it was amazing. It was amazing having the time off and being able to stop and think and plan and, you know, just slow your life down. So I love what your caller has been talking about. It's been right at my alley. So thank you for the great perspective.
And Leah, before you go, I want to ask, you know, you had that time, that 6 weeks there. Has that changed how you are? You're working again, but when you're off work, do you still feel some of the effects of that time off? Did it change the way you think of your time off?
Oh, yeah, it totally changed the way I think. And I mean, it actually got me started on a weight loss journey where I lost like 31 pounds in 3 months because I was able to stop and think, you know, before you put food in your mouth and just, you know, be a healthier version of yourself. It makes you reflect and have time to, you know, like you said, sit down and read a book and stop and think about, you know, what's important in life. And I'm very thankful for that time off to stop and rediscover, because with all the running that you do with your kids and sports and, you know, it's like I said, it's invaluable. And I just hope that people realize that, take it and enjoy it if you have it, because like I said, you're not going to get the opportunity again.
Leah, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. Alan, your thoughts on what Leah had to say there.
Well, I want to salute her as being an essential worker, because all of the rest of us are dependent on Leah and people like her. Leah mentioned that this is the only opportunity we're going to have to take time off. What I hope might come out of this strange period that we're living in now is a change in our habit of mind, an appreciation that quiet time when we're reflecting on what's important to us and what our values are, time that we're unplugged from the internet, that is valuable time. And if we can recognize it as valuable time, maybe we can build that into our lives, that idea, long after the coronavirus is gone. So I hope that this will be a permanent change in the way that we think about our lives and what's important to us.
As you write about this and think about this and talk to other people, do you feel like there's a hunger out there for this kind of thinking, this slower pace, appreciating time doing nothing that we may not have realized was there in the first place?
I do think there's a hunger for it, but I think that we are battling the time equal money equation, which is part of the U.S. obsession with money and materiality, that since the Industrial Revolution, that time has been translated into money. And so I think one of the forces that is driving the lifestyle, the frantic lifestyle that we have now, is the feeling that we can make more money by using time productively. And so I think that is powerful force is battling the other desire that people have, which is to slow down their life and not be just checking off boxes on their to-do list every day. So we have those two powerful opposing forces.
It's a good place to leave it. Alan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for having me on your program.
That's Alan Lightman, writer and physicist who teaches at MIT. His books include Einstein's Dreams and In Praise of Wasting Time. He wrote the piece, "The Virus is a Reminder of Something Lost Long Ago." You can see that in The Atlantic. People are starting to get economic recovery checks from the federal government meant to tide them over during the coronavirus pandemic. Shemaine Mills talked to some who have received the money and others who are still waiting.
Monica Paprocki knows what it's like to have very little. The Milwaukee native grew up in a family that relied on government food assistance, so she knows better than most what a helping hand can do. And that's what inspired the 60-year-old mother of two to carry out a spontaneous act of kindness.
This all started when I was in Pick and Save. I just kind of asked out anybody work at a restaurant, and a little cute little girl said, "I do," and said, "Have you gotten laid off?" And she goes, "Yeah." She goes, "I just got my last paycheck today." So I paid for her groceries.
This month, the federal government started depositing stimulus checks into the bank accounts of most Americans to provide some financial relief during a devastating economic downturn caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Paprocki and her husband, Russ, haven't gotten their check yet. They are eligible, she said, so it may be just a matter of waiting. Paprocki went to the federal government website looking for answers, but didn't get any. And there's no hotline for the general public to call. Instead, there's a recorded message.
"For taxpayers needing assistance, we apologize for the inconvenience that our phone assistance lines are closed because of the coronavirus."
The $2,400 the Paprockis expect from the federal government is less of a concern than the stimulus check for their 28-year-old son, Stephen. Born with Down syndrome, he lives in his own apartment with money from Social Security disability payments and a part-time job at a grocery store. Others, however, have received stimulus money. Shalisha Johnson of Fitchburg is one of them, but she wonders if it'll be enough for a health crisis with no end in sight.
"I think it's a good start, and I realize that the government does not have an endless supply of money."
Johnson is concerned about the long term because she doesn't have anyone to share expenses with.
"Just me. My dog has yet to get a job."
Johnson is referring to her dog Arrow, which inspired the name for her photography business, Arrow Star. But business has dried up with the pandemic. The 44-year-old Johnson has another job with a childcare agency, but relies on her photography gig for grocery and gas money. Another entrepreneur, Camille McCoy, is using her stimulus check to pay rent and utilities at her aromatherapy and massage business, which has been temporarily closed since mid-March.
"It has been a financial stress. I'm just like everybody else, not going to work every day and not knowing when I can go back to work has been a challenge."
The federal legislation that included the stimulus money is an effort to combat some of that uncertainty. James McGibney teaches economics at Marquette University.
"There's kind of both a small stimulus aspect to it and a little bit of signaling or confidence, you know, that, okay, things aren't as bad and we'll get you through this a little bit. So there's some of that going on, too."
It could be weeks before everyone gets their stimulus check. And already some politicians are questioning whether a one-time payment from Uncle Sam will be enough to keep the country going. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, there are a lot of possible futures for the course of the current pandemic. It could be a regular part of life from year to year. A vaccine could end or limit it. A state health expert joins us for a look at different long-term possibilities for COVID-19 here in Wisconsin. Many couples are spending a lot more time together than they usually do. A psychologist, our favorite, Regan Gurung, is back with us with advice on making things work smoothly for cooped-up couples. And some people are turning to old-fashioned letters and postcards to keep in touch with friends and loved ones. We'll take a look at snail mail during the pandemic. You can get us started right now. Let us know if you have been writing for the first time or getting back to writing letters or writing a lot more during the COVID-19 pandemic. Let us know on the Ideas Network Facebook page. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 6, Kate and her guests share great TV shows and movies to watch while we're hunkered down at home, and you can join in with your recommendations. That's tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show. Thanks to everyone who donated during our spring member drive last week. Support from people like Lisa from Madison, Jim from Menominee, and Robert from Eau Claire makes all the programs, including Central Time, possible. We fundraise throughout the year. Like everything else, it's been affected by the current crisis. If you count on the Ideas Network now more than ever, if you missed the drive, your gift now at WPR.org is especially important. Thank you for listening. Thanks for your support. Up next, it's news. Then it's the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. We talk with the author of a recent article titled, We Must Listen to the Earth. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.